Hello everybody and welcome to another edition of the Remote AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotz and joining me on the line today is Clinton Matos.
Hello everybody.
And Robin Chetty.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you guys doing on this lovely Friday? First Friday that I think we've actually had in a while. First Friday after a five-day week, I suppose, is the more accurate thing to say.
Yeah, been some nicer long weekends recently, even though they don't feel that way. It's lockdown.
Yeah, I'm counting the hours until 5 o'clock.
Right, let's jump straight into the news. This week there was a bit of a faux pas on Parliament's site, or Parliament's side rather. If you were tuned into the National Assembly Programme Committee meeting yesterday that was broadcast on DSTV as well as on Parliament's YouTube channel, you might have noticed something that shouldn't have been there, that thing being pornography. What happened was South African Parliament decided that it would tweet out the details of a Zoom meeting it was hosting for the National Assembly Program Committee meeting, and included both the meeting ID as well as the password for that, which was... it was a big mistake because shortly after they tweeted out that information, and once people started joining the Zoom chat, there were racial slurs being lobbied at the speaker, and there was porn being broadcast on the Zoom chat. So everybody got an eyeful of something that I'm sure they didn't want to get an eyeful of at 9 a.m. in the morning. Government did then quickly take down the meeting and started up a new one and didn't tweet out that information.
Hey.
But what followed was a whole bunch of people saying that that Zoom had been hacked. No, they hadn't been hacked because government decided to tweet out the information. And it's not really a hack if you give somebody your login details, is it? I suppose you could say that it was social engineering, but that's a stretch at best.
Yeah, geez.
But yeah, so that tweet was still up. So clearly who posted these details didn't realize the error of their ways, and the tweet is still up. So you can go and check it and see just how ridiculous this whole situation was. But it's a teachable moment to everybody. If you're going to have a Zoom call, maybe keep your meeting ID and password private, or only share it with those people that need to join that call.
Or use Google Meet.
Or use Google Meet, or use Microsoft Teams, or use whatever you want to do. Just be a bit safety conscious, you know? I know that Zoom has had issues with security in the past couple of weeks, but they are working to address those. Teachable moment there. Don't tweet out your Zoom ID and password and expect nothing to happen. Clinton, what do you have for us?
So, Andy Serkis, everybody knows him as Smeagol, as Golem. And then he was Ulysses Claw in the MCU. He is doing something special for coronavirus relief. He's going to be reading The Hobbit. That is the book that the three movies are based on.
I think we should call it, isn't it just like a short story that they turned into
it's
three
a
books?
Story. It's literally a child's version of some Lord of the Rings lore. Anyway, it's one of the audiobooks that exists for it is about 11 hours, and Andy Serkis has said he's going to do a live stream that's 12 hours. And he is basically set up a GoFundMe. Sorry, I didn't know which crowdfunding site it was. It's a GoFundMe, and anyone watching the stream, which should be up already, actually I haven't checked, they will donate to the two charities, which is Best Beginnings and the NHS Charities Together. They're both... They're both institutions in the UK. And oh, I'm going to do something live. He is live on YouTube. I thought they'll do it on Twitch. But yeah, he's live. Earlier in the day, we didn't have the link to it. And you can go check it out. And it's hilarious because somebody made this picture. I don't know what you'd call it. Streamer Smeagol, where he's got like a microphone and he's wearing headphones. I thought that was just a Photoshop. But now I see in the stream that Andy Serkis has a giant like 1-to-1 scale Smeagol statue in his office. So
what?
He just took that statue. Yeah, I'll put a picture. He just put that statue into frame, and he put headphones and a mic in front of it. So that it wasn't Photoshop. I'm very happy to see that. So yeah, if you have a few bucks and you want to donate to what's happening in the UK, I think it's more intended for people in the UK. They originally had a goal of 100,000 pounds, which is around 2.3 million rand. And earlier today when I wrote the story, they were at 88,000 pounds. And now they've actually blown past it. They're at 156,000 pounds. So that's a lot of money. And we'll probably look back at it next week and see how much money was raised. But yeah, go check that out. If you are reading this on Friday, it's a 12-hour stream. You should be able to catch some of the stream. Go check it out.
Cool. And Robin, you've got some financials from Uber.
Yeah, the first quarter of 2020 has just elapsed, and Uber, like a bunch of other companies, is listing their quarterly reports. And it doesn't really make for great reading. Like many other companies, Uber has kind of struggled as a result of COVID-19 and national lockdowns, and people are just using their services far less at this time, which makes a lot of sense as to why their quarterly report doesn't look so great. So as far as the key numbers go, Uber was able to post a revenue of 3.5 billion, but it also posted a net loss of 2.9 billion. So it doesn't really make for great reading. One thing that did stand out to us was the fact that Uber Eats has kind of surged in popularity. That also makes a lot of sense given that people are stuck at home and don't have necessarily the same capacity they did of shopping or get food, or in the case of South Africa, get essential goods, which is one of the things that we've seen Uber Eats kind of pivot towards. And I think also they've launched a whole bunch of different services in the past couple of weeks, things like exclusive books, delivering books from them, also the ability to actually send a meal to someone else.
Yeah.
The idea there was around Mother's Day, but I think it would be quite helpful perhaps moving forward as well. I think also one of the interesting elements from the report was the fact that Uber are now going to be cutting a lot of jobs as a result of COVID-19. The estimate is around 40% of its global staff, which is a significant chunk. They're also looking to offload 400 plus employees from the scooter division, referred to as Jump. So yeah, it's from a business perspective, not like a good quarter, and it should be interesting to see how Uber will kind of bounce back from this, if it can bounce back from this post COVID-19. Yeah,
it's pretty scary looking at this. I just before the podcast, I noted a tweet about all the Silicon Valley companies, the guys that take part in the gig economy, or that basically created the gig economy, and how much they're struggling over there. So yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how and if these companies are still around post COVID-19.
Just one thing I wanted to add, Robin, you said that they're letting people go. That is specifically Uber people who work in like the offices in management. They're not cutting down on drivers, if I'm not correct.
Yeah, that's correct. So official employees, drivers, that's kind of up to them whether they want to stay on the platform or
yeah.
not.
Yeah.
I was just thinking if people listen to what you said there and they're a driver, they might think, you know, am I going to get cut or something like that? But as far as we know from what they've announced, it's just people who are full-time employees, not part-time drivers.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
So, moving on then, today we actually wanted to chat a bit about e-commerce and its role in the current pandemic and in lockdown here in South Africa. Since we moved to level 4 restrictions, we've seen a few retailers come back online, likes of Takealot. We've seen places like EveTech once again open for business, but we've also seen quite a few more that haven't. So last weekend, over the long weekend, RebelTech, a IT e-commerce website, announced that it was shuttering operations due to COVID-19, which is very sad because that means a whole bunch of people are losing their jobs. But more than that, it's kind of highlighted to me just how fragile the e-commerce system in South Africa is, number one, and how much it relies on, well, business being functioning. I want to kick this whole conversation off, though, with a question to you guys. Have you ordered anything online since lockdown? Let's start with you, Robin, and then go to Clinton. So, Robin, have you ordered anything online? What's the experience been like for you?
Locally, the only things I've been ordering online is food ever since we got into level 4.
Yeah.
That experience has been relatively seamless. It does take a bit longer because restaurants have fewer staff. So it's, and also we have to factor in the curfew.
Yeah.
So you have to order a bit earlier than normal. So in terms of that, there are a few nuisances, but it's not a major thing. If you're looking at hardware and stuff like that, I haven't been ordering from local suppliers. I have ordered a couple of things internationally, and unfortunately, as expected, there seems to be a backlog and a long, long, long waiting time. So yeah, it's also a bit frustrating as well, my online experiences thus far.
Clinton, and yourself, have you ordered anything online?
So I haven't ordered, like Robin, I've ordered food a few times and it's been a mixed bag. Sometimes it works perfectly. Sometimes, like with Debonairs the other day, I ordered something, it went through, I paid, and then they sent me an email 10 minutes later saying, sorry, that something went wrong, we'll refund you your money in 5 business days. So yeah, it's a real mixed bag, but I understand why it is nice to get food that you're not making. In terms of physical products, I haven't ordered anything essential. What I did order was, I know it's going to sound grandiose, but I ordered a Lego set from the Great Yellow Brick Road, which is the South African arm of the official Lego store.
Yeah.
The reason I did that is because they were running a special. If you bought something during lockdown, you got double loyalty points. And they said, you know, when the lockdown's finished, yeah, it'll go straight to you. And then they announced that lockdown wasn't going to finish. They were just going to introduce stages. So like Robin said, even if you had plans of buying things, they've kind of gone out the door. And even though I've paid for that thing already, I just have to wait for lockdown to end. If that ever happens, you know, there could be an apocalypse, or it doesn't. Don't want to think about that. So yeah, it's been weird. But I think people have to get ready for this might be the new normal.
So I want to jump in here and just ask you guys Robin, what area do you stay in?
Midrand area, Kyalami.
Okay, and Clinton, yourself?
I live near the big Greenstone area, near the shopping center.
Okay, so I stay on the West Rand, and since the lockdown level 4 was implemented on the 1st of May, I've been wanting to order food online. So there is Uber Eats, there is Mr. D Food, there is another one here. I'll tell you what its name is now. Bolt Food.
A few of the restaurants have their own apps, like Steers and McDonald's.
Yeah. So I have tried to order food online from both of those, or from all of those places, and none of them are delivering in the area that I stay in. And beyond that, I tried to place an order through an online retailer yesterday. I'm not going to mention the name of the retailer because I'm still trying to figure out what's going on, because usually I have had deliveries there. But yesterday I was informed that the retailer does not do deliveries in my area at the moment. Now, I am not out in a rural area. I am literally right next to a massive mall. I am off of a main highway, but I am unable to get stuff delivered to me. And like I said, I am not out in a rural area. It concerns me that you have the Minister for Public Service and Administration, Senzo Mkunu, who is saying that government urges citizens to utilize available online services to lessen physical interaction and minimize the risk associated with transmission of COVID-19 while trying to bring in necessary services back into operation. Now, my question to the minister is how? Because, first of all, e-commerce entities are severely limited. The CEO of YuppieChef spoke to Bruce Whitfield, co-founder Andrew Smith of YuppieChef, spoke to Bruce Whitfield on 702, saying that the lockdown restrictions on e-commerce are unfair, and that is something that Minister Ibrahim Patel did state, is that it would be unfair to allow unfettered e-commerce given the lockdown restrictions, which is very confusing because, like Andrew Smith points out, is that you don't block Netflix because it's killing DVD stores. So why is this logic now coming into play? And it concerns me that government is making these statements without understanding, or seemingly without understanding, how these things work. Like, it's all good and well for the minister to say, oh, please use online services, but if they're not available, what am I to do? And beyond that, it's things are just getting very, very crazy. I don't know what you, do you guys have an opinion on this?
Yeah, so going off of what you said, Brendan, about you might live in a slightly more remote area than some people, but there's people who live even more remote than you. I mean, you said you're right next to a big shopping center, but what about people, you know, before the lockdown, when they wanted to get into work, they were driving or taking the taxi an hour to get where they needed to go, right? Their housing situation was far from anything. If they go on these apps or if they go to these online retailers, they're going to just say, oh, sorry, you're too far away. And these people might have in the past said, that's fine, I'll just go physically, you know, maybe after work while I'm still in the area.
Yeah.
They don't have that chance now. What do they do?
Yeah. Robin, anything to add?
Yeah, I think this kind of illustrates how there's been in terms of assisting the most vulnerable. I think we can all say that we're in a very fortunate position where we don't have to necessarily worry about getting access to essential goods and services. Mm. It's the people that one can't make actual use of e-commerce platforms purely because data costs are too high.
Yeah.
And then as a result, because of the high density living environments, you find a lot of services aren't actually willing to enter into those areas.
Uh-huh.
For the risk that they might suffer as well. So I understand what the minister was saying with regards to making more use of e-commerce platforms, but then there needs to be a bit greater collaboration between government and those actual e-commerce platforms, them aligned as to how best to go about this. I think level four, or rather the kind of phased process for lockdown has been a real mess, especially when it comes to communication from government. And yeah, I don't see it really changing anytime soon because we're getting new messages every day, and yeah, it becomes more and more confusing. And yeah.
So just on that, just looking at the SA Coronavirus website, where the risk-adjusted strategy, which kind of is supposed to give you a guideline of how things will slowly open up, if you go to that web, to that section on the SA Coronavirus website, you'll see that it still lists tobacco products as something that's for sale, and this is now where the reason I wanted to chat about this comes into place. This morning, I noted a story regarding the fact that you are now able to move house. There are limitations to that. You must have signed the lease before lockdown, or you must have the deed in your possession, that sort of stuff. But it's very worrying to me that these regulations are just coming through piecemeal. And I think that it's a very dangerous line that government is treading, is rather than sitting down as a collective and going, right, what are the regulations? We're now getting regulations fed to us in drips and drabs, and we don't know what actually is going on. For instance, a week ago, if I needed to move house and I was told, no, you're not allowed to move house, I cancelled my moving company, I cancelled all the help, I told the person I'm not moving anymore. Now this morning I wake up and, oh, you are suddenly allowed to move house. It's creating a lot of confusion, creating a lot of tension, and slowly but surely people are going to start losing faith in what is happening here. And I understand that the reason for the lockdown is to make sure that the health system is not inundated with people trying to get a treatment for COVID-19. That is the core reason for having this lockdown. But now it's starting to feel like decisions are just being made without that logic being applied to it, without that reasoning being applied to that. And I understand that I am a smoker, and the rules around smoking did make me really angry. But I've since taken a step back and started to just look at everything that's coming through, and things are just starting to make very, very little sense, particularly as it relates to e-commerce. Like, there's a lot of things that just, like, why is Yuppie Chef not allowed to be selling appliances? Why can I not buy summer clothing? What was the reason behind only selling winter clothing? Like, if I'm a person that doesn't get cold during winter, I know that sounds weird, but there are such people. Like, why can I not buy a pair of shorts? I was in Pick and Pay on Tuesday to do some shopping because obviously I couldn't have it delivered to me. And I couldn't buy a two-plate stove if I wanted to. But I could buy a heater. It's just starting to, like, it's very strange how these decisions are coming about.
Yeah. It's like you said, people are just losing faith because of the flip-flopping. I think people would be far less angry with decisions like the cigarette ban if they just never said that, okay, people can get it, and then they went back on that decision. And then when you introduce new rules on the fly like this, it causes a lot of problems in the chain of command, as you will. So say, for example, this decision just came down the other day, and you're, I don't know, a police officer or somebody else who has to be on the streets enforcing these rules. Mm-hmm. If you stop a car on the highway and they're full of couches and things, and you ask the people, and they are legitimately moving house because they're allowed to do that now.
Yeah.
When/if were you told that? And then what happens if you're the police officer and you make an incorrect arrest because the decision just wasn't passed down fast enough?
I'll go one further, Clinton. I'll take this one step further, right? Let's say you're moving house now this weekend. You got all your permits in order and that sort of stuff. But in your old house, you had a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue. And now you have to move house. Now, under the regulations, you moving house... is allowed, but you're not allowed to transport alcohol. So if the cops pull you over and you've got a bottle of booze while you're moving house, do you go to prison? I mean, and that isn't clarified in these regulations. They are just there's so many gaps that are starting to come up, and it occurred to me in particularly as relates to e-commerce. Now I'm on an e-commerce website right now, and for instance, I can buy a fragrance. Now, why can I buy a fragrance, but I can't buy an oven or a kettle?
I can't even buy underpants right now.
I mean,
I still don't understand the underpants stuff. But anyway, I understand you, Brendan. It's just so slapdash. Now, to play devil's advocate for a second, stuff like this has never happened before, right? There have been pandemics, but there's never been a pandemic like this. And, you know, it's a completely, everybody uses that word, it's unprecedented, right? So on the one hand, we have to say the people in charge have never had to deal with this before. Everybody's just winging it. There's no other way to say it. Even if you have, you know, expert opinion, even if you have the professors and the doctors giving you advice, this is still the first time you're doing things. Usually when you do stuff the first time, it doesn't go 100% right. But on the other hand, some of the decisions are just baffling. there's no other way to say it. I don't know why a lot of what's been done is being done. Very strange.
Yeah, and it goes a step further as well, including, let's play devil's advocate again regarding the not allowing all e-commerce to be operational. I understand in the sense of if you give the likes of your big e-tailers the ability to keep operating, are the smaller retailers able to keep operating as well? And I would hazard a guess at perhaps not. I don't know. I can't speak. I'm kind of spitballing here based off of my knowledge of small little e-commerce businesses. If they are even still able to be operational following the lifting of restrictions. So I can understand that in some aspects, but on the same token, you have things like Takealot Marketplace, where small businesses can advertise through Takealot, and then Takealot fulfills the actual order and delivery and handles all of that stuff. You just get your stuff to Takealot, Takealot then ships it along to somebody else. Which makes sense. It's a really cool platform. Same thing with Bolt Business Delivery. Gives small businesses a way to facilitate deliveries without having to have that infrastructure in place. But beyond all that, it's if you have services like that, why aren't you letting e-commerce just go wild? Especially when government is saying, hey, make use of online services where possible so you don't need to come into contact with people. And then it's like, okay, but we don't have the infrastructure in place for that. And regulations before this, at lockdown, there was a challenge from the South African Postal Services regarding the couriering of parcels that are under 1 kilogram, because According to regulations, which are published, and legislation, the only person, the only entity that is allowed to deliver parcels like that is the post office. But it's kind of backwards because, like, e-commerce exists, so do they have to fulfill all their deliveries through the post office then? It starts to get really weird, and you start to understand that, hang on, maybe this e-commerce thing hasn't been fully thought out in South Africa, and places like Takealot and Raru have kind of just made do while they could in less than ideal circumstances, and now they kind of handcuffed and can't do much.
It's also worth noting the big thing that, again, we're very lucky. We have, you know, fiber in our homes. We have computers to connect to them. A lot of people, they just don't have that stuff at home. Either they've just never had it and never experienced it, or they used it at work or in a community center or something like that. You know, when you have government saying, oh, just go online, and they're sitting there saying, but how?
Yeah.
And a lot of times, even if they do have just a cell phone or something, data is extremely expensive. I mean, mm-hmm. I just published a story the other day, which I'll link to, where a company analyzed, I think it was 220 countries, something like that. And South Africa came 148th in terms of most expensive. Now, I just want to reiterate, the higher that number, the worse it is, not the better. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's just so many problems that are being experienced at every level, and it adds to that sense of confusion and that loss of faith. Again, not to get too biblical there.
Yeah, I think it highlights the lack of connectivity that actually is in the country.
Mm.
I know a lot of networks preach about how much coverage they have.
Yeah.
But connectivity and coverage are very different things.
Yeah.
You kind of highlighted it as well. We're talking about schools and how they've kind of had to work with innovative solutions in this time. And connectivity is still the biggest hurdle for them. And I think
yeah.
the same thing applies here. People try to access e-commerce services. Connectivity is nowhere near where it actually needs to be.
But let's... sorry, Clinton, go ahead, Clinton.
Sure. So I've spoken about this in the past, but UNISA is going ahead with its exam season in May, June 2020, which, you know, is right now. And they've basically said, okay, we're going to do it online. And then, of course, people said, but I can't get online. I go to UNISA as a student. I either do all my stuff in paper form, or I get onto the internet by going to one of the many UNISA campuses and using you know, their computers, their internet, their infrastructure. Now, that infrastructure has been closed since the lockdown because, you know, that's the law.
Mm.
And those people have just been left, you know, I don't want to use an expletive here, but they've been up the creek.
Yeah.
And it was such a slap in the face to those people when an email came out. This wasn't leaked or anything. This was sent to students to fill out. And they basically said, listen, we're trying to gauge how many people have access to computers and data. Can you fill out this online survey? wait a minute. If you don't have a way to get online, how are you supposed to fill this out? And even if the survey gets finished, it's going to be disproportionate because only people with access to that stuff will be able to fill it out. Now, again, you could maybe, I don't know, hop on your neighbor's Wi-Fi. Could so many like scalem things you could do, but it's ridiculous. On the one hand, it's dumb, but on the other hand, what is UNISA supposed to do? You could say, oh, they should have the, you know, information of how many students are online and how many aren't. Sure, but again, lockdown was announced with a few days' notice, and again, this is all unprecedented. So I don't blame the university for not having that stuff on hand.
Yeah.
The only thing I can offer in that regard is we're actually going to have an interview with the principal and vice counselor of UNISA. I don't know when that's going to be up. We're just waiting for the questions to be answered by our interviewee. We'll have that up at some point, either late today or next week. And I asked him, how have you accounted for people not being able to fill it out? And I'm very interested to see what he says. I won't get too deep into it, but the survey was put together by someone who has a lot of experience in this kind of information gathering. So I'm sure they're doing something to account for it, you know, adjusting the figures, going by national benchmark, something like that. We'll need to wait for official word.
The other thing I kind of want to touch on a bit, especially with regards to e-commerce and deliveries, is just in terms of addresses. So while lots of us will know how addresses work in the suburbs and in the major central districts of the country, the major metros, so like Joburg, Cape Town, Durban, that sort of places, I do want to point out that it's a little bit different in places like townships. So like Soweto and Tembisa and places like that. Like, it's not a case of, oh, it's number 9 Johnson Street in Rosebank, and here's the thing. It's a lot more complicated, and a lot of the time your map books or your Google Maps or those sorts of places aren't going to take you to the right place. And that adds another issue here is, sure, I'll use the delivery, but if the person can't find me, what am I to do? It's just, I think what this lockdown is doing is, and I've seen it said online before, is it is, it's highlighting the inequality in our country in a way that has never been seen since apartheid ended all those years ago.
The digital divide.
Yeah, the digital divide, and it's becoming more and more apparent. Even not just the digital divide, but the financial divide, the economic divide here in South Africa. It's just being highlighted so much more in this situation. Because while I can get on the phone and get the pizza place down the road to deliver pizza for me, I can, number one, afford that. Number two, I'm in an area where that can happen. But what about other places? You know, what about these other places that perhaps a person that can't cook? Because that is a legitimate thing. Some people just are too old or too frail to actually cook. And they can't get Uber Eats. And as we've heard with Uber, like, things aren't doing too well on that side of things. And is Uber going to expand its offering now at this point in time? I would argue that would be a really good thing for it to do. But on the same point is, does it have the ability to do that? And it's just, all these things are just becoming more and more compounded. And there's lots of questions and there's very little response from government in this regard. The e-commerce stuff, for instance, was raised last week before the 1st of May, before Level 4 was put into place. And as of time of recording, there's not much news on that front. Is, are we going to get a situation where all e-commerce is going to be allowed? Who knows? At this point, we could suck the answer from our thumb and it could be completely false. So I think the one thing that needs to happen from government side is there needs to be clear and consistent communication with business and citizens in the country so that we know what we are allowed to do and what we aren't allowed to do. I mean, just as an example, Mother's Day is on Sunday, and I'm sure a lot of people want to send their mom stuff, but is getting your mom a gift delivered via an online retailer, is that considered essential? Is that within the gambit of what they are allowed to deliver? I don't know, but I have done it because it's there and I'm going to use it because it's available. If I find out I've now broken the law, what's the recourse? Am I going to be in prison for breaking the law that I didn't know was the law because it wasn't highlighted or put in a fine-grained enough approach for me to know exactly what it is I can and can't do? And I've spoken to a lot of friends about this, is that I know that I can't buy cigarettes. I know that I can't buy alcohol. But can I go out and buy a new kettle? Because some places have it open, some don't. Can I go out and buy a two-plate stove? Some places have it, some places don't. It's very, very confusing at this stage.
Yeah, and something that's crazy is there's that old saying, I don't know where it comes from, but they say ignorance of the law is not an excuse to break it. But there's such wide confusion about maybe not what's the law, but what are the rules right now that are being enforced, like the law. You know, you're going to wind up, hopefully not, but if you wind up the back of a police car in the precinct and your defense is, I didn't know, that could kind of be valid right now. Maybe make friends with a lawyer.
So the other reason I wanted to chat about this, sorry, Robin, you wanted to say something.
I was just going to mention that I think government needs to also be cognizant of the fact of how costly e-commerce or other e-commerce platforms are.
Yeah.
We've written about that COVID-19 grant, which is $350.
Yeah.
That's essentially one meal for a family for
yeah.
Uber or Uber Eats or whatever. That's them done for the month after one meal.
Yeah.
So, understand making it available for consumers like us who have the ability to actually assist restaurants. But if we're talking about essentials, the cost involved in using e-commerce platforms is also something that needs to be considered as well moving forward.
Absolutely. And it's not to say that e-commerce sites shouldn't be making money. Obviously, we think they should. Obviously, that these people are supporting other people. People work there. People have jobs there. Like, it's not to say that they shouldn't be making a profit off of this stuff, you know, that they shouldn't be charging a markup. I get all those things. But like Robin says, is that it's something that should be considered before you start making statements like, please utilize available online services to lessen physical interaction. Like, come on, guys. You can't say things like that without thinking about how things work. Now, this may have just been talking about like things like submitting your bill and that sort of stuff. But like, as Clinton has said before, is connectivity is a major issue in this country. Data is very expensive. It's just getting more and more confusing as we go further into this. And like I said at the top of this, the point of the lockdown was to stem the amount of people infected by the virus so that the health system wasn't inundated with people flocking to hospitals. And it seems like we are losing sight of that the further we go into lockdown. We're seeing ministers that are just seemingly making decisions and saying things that are extremely worrying. We've seen lots of things happening that are very concerning in terms from a human rights aspect, and it's concerning, right? And this e-commerce thing is just one tiny part of a much broader puzzle that is falling apart the more we build it.
Yeah, and the kind of related, it's a bit tangential. Tangential? It's a difficult word to pronounce. Is just the mental aspect of all of this. You know, I'm not a psychologist, but I've spoken to one recently, and there's this, I don't know what you'd call it, a general malaise, to use a fancy word there. People are poor. They're not in a good space mentally, and, you know, that is caused by existential dread of a pandemic sweeping through the world, and it's also just from a lack of leadership of those around them. And, you know, mental health wasn't great. I mean, there's so many stories about failing mental health in the modern day, and this has all made it worse. And again, you know, this is affecting those in government as well. They're human beings. They don't know what's going on a lot of the time. Everyone's just in a bad mental space, and it's just a compounding effect.
Mm.
It's a pandemic. We don't know what to do. We're trying to make a quick fix. We don't know how e-commerce works and all of that. And yeah, it's just a bad situation. And right now, it hasn't been solved. I'd love to come back to you guys next week and be like, oh, government fixed it. You know, they fixed it. They came up with a really good plan and they implemented it fast. Everyone was on board and it was bipartisan and everything was
Maybe great. We should just get 2,000 signatures though, guys, because apparently that can overturn a whole bunch of decisions. So if we just get 2,000 people...
I need the Fortnite African servers. I'm going to put my signature in that instead. I'm sorry. I have to betray the cause. I really want this. As an in joke.
But so another thing I wanted to highlight, just kind of to start wrapping up here, is if you guys ordered something on, let's just say hypothetically, you went onto an e-commerce website and you ordered something, and it took you, say, a week and a half for it to arrive because of the delays, and you discovered that your order was wrong, would you send it back? Or would you wait until lockdown was over to send it back?
I contact them first, find out what the procedure is.
Yeah.
If I had to return it like within 7 days or something like that, then yes. But if they wouldn't let me wait, then sure.
That would be a problem. And also it depends on how important it was. I mean, if I needed... I know, like a CPAP machine, and they sent me the wrong one, that would be a big problem, and I'd want to return that as fast as possible. But if, you know, again, if my Lego set came when the lockdown changes and it was the wrong one, I'd be like, I can wait. I've already waited like a month. I can wait 2 or 3 more months. It's not important at all. And I fully realize that.
So the reason I ask this is because there's a lot of work that goes into e-commerce as well at the moment in terms of getting orders ready for people. It's not just a matter of put it in a box and ship it. It's now a matter of making sure that it's sterilized before it goes into the box, making sure that the person who is handling the delivery or handing it off to the courier company is following hygiene protocols. Then when it gets into the courier place, then they've got to observe hygiene protocols. And all of these things start to add up in terms of a monetary cost. And I think a lot of people are also going to, well, perhaps I wonder if we will start to see the price of delivery is going up because of all these things that need to be accounted for, because sanitization is not free, masks are not free, PPE is not free. So a lot of these things need to be accounted for, and obviously they previously weren't. Not because these companies weren't hygienic, it was just something that was like, okay, well, I mean, it's safe here, etc., etc. But I think that we might, hopefully we don't, but I wonder if we will start seeing things like courier services having to up their prices. Hell, even just a markup in terms of prices because of COVID-19 due to limitations on the amounts of stock there is, but then as well with all these additional measures that must be put into place. Like,
I do question the measures though. I mean, this is anecdotal, but I was dealing with a courier yesterday to have a product delivered for us to review. Absolutely no lockdown regulations were adhered to. The courier did not have any kind of gloves or mask on. I had a mask on.
Yeah.
When I went to actually collect the stuff from this chap. It was just a really weird experience. They also started asking me for weird things like my ID and...
Yeah.
Of residents, so I swiftly said no ways to, it was just so. If couriers are going to start upping the price of delivery and validating it by saying that, then it's up to South African citizens to ensure that those kind of measures are also being adhered to, because I don't know what happens behind the scenes.
I mean, I wrote about this when I had a Takealot delivery. And Takealot had contracted the delivery to a third party, and no hygiene protocols were observed at all when I took that delivery. I was wearing a mask. I was sanitizing my hands. This person was wearing a mask, no gloves, nothing. And while it did unnerve me, I didn't want to take on the company because I wasn't sure if they had been informed that they need to have these measures in place. And it's kind of this disconnect that we're seeing as well, is that you have the company saying one thing, and then when it comes time for you to use that service, it's like, oh, but hang on, this is not how it works at all. And yeah, I don't know. I think one of the main problems that I'm seeing is that lockdown was implemented and restrictions were put in place, but the effects of those regulations weren't fully considered. And this is what we're seeing now with this e-commerce situation, is that the effects of the lockdown and only limiting what people are allowed to sell is severely kneecapping the ability for e-commerce sites to be available, number one, to consider expansion possibly, and to just keep operating and delivering things that people need. It would be really nice for Takealot to sell more than instant ramen as a food thing, but how are they going to do that? There's so many questions that need to be answered, and we are now going into a second month of a lockdown, even though it's slightly eased in terms of restrictions, and I have way more questions now than I did at the end of March.
Yeah, so to kind of wrap things up, I just want to mention two things quick. I've gotten missed a delivery twice for the family, and both times the drivers have been fantastic. They were wearing masks and gloves. They stood far away from me. It's a bit weird because you're like, do I smell or something? No, they were just keeping social distance, and they must have been instructed, they never passed the stuff to you. They put it on the floor and then they kind of pointed it and said, can you take it out? So I was very impressed with Mr. Delivery Drivers. And the other thing I just wanted to mention is I've heard this from a few sources. It's very strange that the e-commerce places you'd think they'd be making a killing, but like you said, Brendan, they've had to spend extra on all the extra protection measures. And because they can't sell their full range, a lot of them are actually losing money because they're staying open. And they're selling less product, they're selling more of other things. You know, they're not selling big expensive fridges and stuff like that. And on the flip side of that, people who are working, you know, we don't really think about it, but when you order something, it goes through a lot of people's hands, right? It comes from China usually or somewhere else. It goes through the docks. It goes to a warehouse. In the warehouse, it has to be sorted. Once it's sorted, it needs to be put into a cart for your order. Then it goes to the delivery drive, and then it goes to you. And I'm sure I missed a few people. All those people are at risk. I'm not even talking about the end consumer, which is us. I'm talking about all those workers at the e-commerce site. Are they being compensated financially with medical insurance for the risk they're being put in? I don't think so. And it's all very scary.
Yeah, absolutely. It's getting scarier, and we urgently need government to come in and actually make logical decisions regarding things. Things that match the original reason for the lockdown. Not, oh, hey, we want to... Because the fact of the matter is, and I think that we need to reiterate this, the only way we get rid of COVID-19 is with a vaccine, a treatment, or herd immunity. And herd immunity is out of the question at the moment because the risk is way too high. But a vaccine or treatment is what is going to be needed to get rid of this. And until that happens, which we don't know when that is going to happen, you can't be kneecapping people's ability to survive and live and do what they need to do in favor of stopping a virus. It's a very difficult decision to make. I understand that, but there needs to be logic behind the decisions that are made, and we can't be said, hey, you know what? The reason for this is classified. That just doesn't work. Right.
Anyway.
I think that's going to do us for this week.
Wrap
it up. Does anybody have anything they want to add as a final say? Robin?
I think we've discussed it previously about the levels and phases of lockdown and how we thought the phased approach was going to be a better one. On paper it was, in practice it has not been, and more and more start to wonder whether or not an extended lockdown should have been this, and then a full-fledged opening up of the economy and at a later stage instead of this phased approach. Unfortunately, government has handled this quite poorly up until now.
Clinton?
Everybody, please just stay inside. If you're not an essential worker and you don't have a legit reason to go outside, just stay at home, please. I think I said the exact same thing last week.
But that's going to do it from us this week. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hopefully, e-commerce is operating in your area and you're able to get things that you need to be able to survive and make lockdown just a little bit more comfortable for you. If you're not, if you're in a similar situation to me where I don't know when I'm going to be able to order new stuff that I need that to survive. I think strength to you. But that's going to do it from us, from myself, Brendan Lotz. Cheerio from Clinton Matos.
Bye, everybody.
And from Robin Lee Chetty.
Okay.
We'll see you next week. Cheerio.
The number you have dialed is not in service at this time.